So my name is Trita Parsi. I'm the president of the National Iranian American Council. It's the largest Iranian American organization, a grassroots organization in the U.S. I'm also an author of two books on foreign policy, A Treacherous Alliance, The Secret Dealings of Israel, Iran, and the United States, that dealt with a different side of the Israeli-Iranian relationship that very few people knew about, as well as A Single Role of the Dice that came out just a few years ago that deals with Obama's policy towards Iran. I teach at Georgetown University and at Johns Hopkins University, where I teach Middle East studies. Unfortunately, it's not going to be an easy solution. It's very disheartening to see how radicalism have spread so much in the last couple of years and how the conflicts in the Middle East tend to actually get more intense rather than less intense. I fear that we are going towards an era in which we're going to see much, much more bloodshed in the next decade or two. And the reason for it, the underlying reason for it, is that the order that existed in the region before has fallen apart. That order was supported and upheld by the power of the United States. Now, many of the countries in the region and many of the groups in the region were not happy with that order. The Iranians, for instance, were very much opposed to that order because they felt that Iran deserved a much bigger role in the region than what that order permitted. But nevertheless, that order created a certain degree of stability. And as the United States weakened itself by mistakenly going into Iran, erroneously going into Iraq, and the disaster that followed, the United States has no longer been able to uphold the order as existed before. And that has set loose energies that were there but were in check. And I think the Arab Spring, for instance, would not have happened had it not been for the United States weaken itself to the extent. In fact, there were major protests in 2003 and 2005 in Egypt, and Mubarak easily could crush them because he had the backing of the United States back then. Post-2011, that was no longer the case. The United States has made up its mind, or at least its administration, wants to disentangle itself from the Middle East to a certain extent and focus on the challenges that it will face in East Asia. All of that then means that in a region where there is no order, conflict will significantly increase, and it will increase until a new equilibrium is found. And that's going to be very, very difficult. Unfortunately, in the past, historically, new equilibriums have been found through war. The defeat of one side and a new balance has been created. I think in this specific case, that may no longer be an option because war has become increasingly costly and lacking utility. No major modern state can actually really afford war any longer because their citizens want good lives. They want to have the freedom. They want to have. They want to be able to consume things that are not possible if a country is involved in a land war for a lengthy period of time. So, in an ideal world, the Middle East would learn from the experience of Europe, and I think particularly on the Turkish side, there's been a lot of inspiration from how the Europeans have managed to create an unprecedented era of stability in Europe. And remember, what we're seeing in the Middle East right now used to happen in Europe on a regular basis. It just ended 60, 70 years ago, but that's it. And I think for that, it would ideally be such that you would have democratic states that would lead it, but that's not going to happen. What you need then instead is to have mature states lead an effort similar to what Germany, France, and England did in Europe, the three strongest states in Europe who took the initiative and were driving forces and the power behind the creation of the EU, the creation of collective security. In the Middle East right now, the two best, most plausible candidates are actually Iran and Turkey. Two states that at the end of the day, in spite of all of their flaws, and they both certainly have many flaws, are more stable, have much more mature states, meaning that they have bureaucracies that are hundreds of years old. These are not states whose policies easily can go this way or that way, and who have a historic debt there. The Turkish foreign minister has already extensively spoken about the concept of collective security. And whereas Turkey is applying that in its current foreign policy or not is a different matter, but at least that type of intellectual arrival exists in Turkey. The Iranian foreign minister speaks very much in the same terms. The previous Iranian foreign minister certainly did not, and the Ahmadinejad government certainly did not think in those terms, and it's not clear whether the Iranian government actually thinks in those terms, even though the foreign minister speaks in those terms. But that's a very unique scenario in the Middle East. You don't have that in other states. You don't have other states talking about collective security or showing a depth of understanding of that concept. A country like Israel, which is a democracy and has a very, very mature state, is itself deeply, deeply entrenched in a balance of power mindset and a very, very, in my view, paranoid mindset in the way that it looks at the rest of the region. It's the opposite of the mindset that is needed in order to create collective security. Well, I would agree in the sense that you do need all of the states in the region.
Yeah.
You do need Israel.
Definitely.
You do need Saudi Arabia as well. But the question is, who are the states that are capable of leading such an effort? I see Iran and Turkey as the two most plausible candidates. They don't have to be. This is not because Turkey is Turkey or it's because Iran is Iran. It's because the current situation and as I mentioned, the maturity of the states. Other states could also achieve that same degree and as a result become candidates. But right now, because of their power, because of the maturity of state, they are the two strongest candidates. But alone, ultimately, they cannot. They can only initiate. They can only lead. But they also have to help other states along the way. And part of the reason why this is more difficult now than it was 5 years ago is because now both Turkey and Iran have certain tensions. And both Turkey and Iran have more conflicts with their neighbors than they had before. The more conflicts you have with your neighbors, the more difficult it is to actually take such a leading role. The United States certainly can help, but I would say that it would actually have to be the entire Security Council. There is a resolution in the UN Security Council, 598, that ended the Iraq-Iran war, that makes a reference to the need of creating a new order in the region, a new security architecture in the region that should be backed by the UN Security Council. I think we should be careful not to say that because they failed to authorize military intervention in Syria, that that is the same as to say that they cannot authorize a peaceful initiative. I think authorizing a peaceful policy initiative perhaps might actually be easier. I think that would be a very good initiative, and I think it would have to be coupled with this, with certain things. Ultimately, that type of intellectual struggle is needed. Again, if you take a look at what happened in Europe after World War II, after two world wars that had killed millions of Europeans, destroyed the continent, there was a realization, there was an intellectual realization, there could not be any more wars on European soil. And to do so, the concept of collective security, the idea that I'm not secure unless you are secure, that security is a collective good. Either everyone has it or no one has it. It's like the air that we breathe. No one can monopolize the air. Everyone will have it or no one can have it. That type of intellectual realization was necessary in order to implement the plan. And what we're struggling with in the Middle East right now is that we're in a crisis. And we don't have the intellectual realization yet, unfortunately. And as a result, they cannot act on any plan that they don't understand.
Yeah.
So in that sense, I would agree with you. And it's now, whether you would have to use a religious discourse to be able to reach that or not, I think is a separate question. The unavoidable step is that there has to be an intellectual realization before there can be any plan. Otherwise, the Middle East will continue to go down the path that I pointed out, which is that they will find a new equilibrium, not because of an active intellectual effort to create a new equilibrium absence violence, but because they will fight until they cannot fight any longer, and that will be the new equilibrium. And they will be costing thousands and thousands of lives. And as you correctly pointed out, even if there is an equilibrium, it will only be a temporary one until violence comes back. Well, the Iranians and the Israelis, unfortunately, right now are in a very bad position. It is interesting, though, because at the end of the day, they do increasingly share. They do increasingly share certain goals and interests. The United States and Iran actually have a lot of common interests in the region right now. Just to give you an example of how things have changed, the United States still puts the territorial integrity of Iraq very high up on its agenda, meaning Iraq cannot disintegrate into several different countries. The Iranians have the same objective. I believe the Turks have the same objective.
Yes.
But the Israelis have come out and say that they support Kurdish independence, which means that there would be a separation of Iraq. I'm mentioning this to say that we have to realize that we are in a new era right now, and that old alliances have some of their foundations being withering away, because the geopolitical perspective of the United States towards the Middle East right now seems to increasingly differ from the geopolitical perspective of the Saudis and of the Israelis. And on some points, the Americans actually tend to view things a bit more like the Iranians view it. However, because of political differences, the Iranians and the United States are not collaborating, and they are not taking advantage of areas of common interest. And until they resolve the nuclear issue, I find it very difficult to see that they would actually manage to overcome those differences and collaborate. Again, these are highly agreeable objectives. I don't think anyone could disagree with it. The challenge is not to recognize where we want to be. Even a child would be able to easily say that. The challenge is to find the way, the path towards that objective. And I agree with you 100% with the objective. Looking at the way the Iraq war has cost the United States, and that's not even taking into account what it has cost Iraq. The country is destroyed. But if you take a look at what it's cost the United States, the entire U.S. educational system, so many different things could be fixed. I think a number came out somewhere saying that the entire population or youth of the United States could go for college for free for 18 years for the cost of this Iraq war. So clearly, it doesn't make sense. Clearly, something is fundamentally wrong. And recognizing that is not necessarily a small thing, but it cannot be the only thing. You have to then try to find a path. How do we change? How do we change course on something that is so used to moving in this direction, to shift it in this different direction? And it's not an easy job. I personally believe that to a certain extent, President Obama very much would like to have gone in that direction. Very much would like to have, he won elections based on the promise of ending two wars. And he's tried very hard to make sure that he doesn't get involved in more wars. And if you're here in Washington, you will see there are constant pressures that Obama should get himself involved in new wars, whether it is in Syria or elsewhere. Constant, constant, constant. And I think it shows how difficult it is that there is this complex, there is this pattern that is very difficult to break. It's going to take quite a lot of effort to be able to do so. I do agree with the notion that ultimately, you're not going to be able to have any security in the region unless it comes from the people from the region. Security is not something that can be dropped on the heads of people from the outside. There has to be a fundamental, inherent, regional root for it. And that goes back to what we talked about earlier on. To have that level of intellectual maturity of being able to see that bigger picture and then be able to draw up a plan and act on it. I think Turkey can play a very critical role in this. It is a very powerful country. It is also a country that is secular, yet Muslim. Yeah. It is a country that shifted its focus towards the Middle East for a very long period of looking westwards all the time. Right. Sure, but it's also recognizing that it has a role and a place to play in the Middle East as well. But I want to emphasize, no single country alone, whether the United States, Turkey, or Iran, could do this on its own.
Yeah.
No European power could have created the European Union on its own. It was a very painstaking and at times frustrating process, but it was the Europeans had a benefit that they were all democracies. It does help, but I don't think it's necessary. Again, take a look at Israel. Israel is a democracy, but the concept of collective security is very, very far away from the current Israeli security outlook. So democracy in itself does not automatically create that type of a mindset, although it's very helpful. But I think more than, again, risking repeat myself, we have to first start off with the mature states. And again, there, Turkey and Iran stand out. Yeah. It is spreading, and I don't want to sound pessimistic, but I think we should recognize that it can actually get much worse than it already is. Well, I mean, at the end of the day, so far, there's been a tremendous amount of suffering, and there's been a tremendous amount of instability. But so far, the borders have not been redrawn. What is happening with ISIS in Iraq right now, and their decision to pronounce a new country, a new caliphate, is a new development. If it stands, that means that actually the states are falling apart altogether. It's not the state apparatus itself, which in Iraq fell apart and is part of the reason why they could never reestablish order again. But now you may actually have the states falling apart. And that's going to have very, very deep impact and much longer instability for a while. If that takes place, it's going to take much longer before we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah.